This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So things are not really that great in terms of talking about the suffering of the people there.
That's Obang Mitho, a social justice activist in Ethiopia, talking about increasing conflict in Tigray. Details coming up. Also, Nigerian business owners in South Africa face losses after riots. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region appears to be escalating, with reports that Tigrayan and Amhara forces are recruiting more youths to fight in the country's north. Aid agencies are warning that a drawn-out war in Ethiopia would cost thousands more lives and worsen food insecurity. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Local media reports forces from Ethiopia's Amhara, Oromia and Sidama region are mobilizing to attack Tigrayan forces a few weeks after Ethiopia's government declared a unilateral ceasefire in the country's north. Many now fear the fighting in Tigray may turn into an ethnic conflict. Obang Mitho is the head of the Solidarity Movement for New Ethiopia, an organization fighting for social justice. He says the fighting is concentrated at the Tigray-Amhara border.
In the last few, 3 days, 4 days, the fighting is over there. The TPLF want to go back and take some of those lands, which, you know, belong to the Amhara, which they are taking over in the last 27 years. So, and it seemed to be the Amhara resisting and fighting back there. So things are not really that great in terms of talking about the suffering of the people there.
The disputed territories are the Welkate, Tegede, Humera, Telemet and Raya districts. The Amhara claimed the land was taken from them when the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front took control of the national government in 1991. Amhara, the second biggest ethnic group in Ethiopia, took over some disputed areas between the two federal states in the north of the country last year. This week, the government in Addis Ababa, led by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, threatened to end its ceasefire, blaming Tigray rebel forces for provocation. Ethiopian political commentator Befeqadu Hailu says the conflict between the Amhara and Tigray needs a political solution.
Since Ethiopian politics is shaped by ethnicity and regions are named after ethnic groups, it sounds like, you know, the ethnic groups are fighting. So there is this thing. So the Tigray regional state has its own militia force, and the Amhara regional state has its own militia. So these militia are receiving, you know, instructions from the governments, the regional governments. And they are fighting because they are instructed by the political leaders. So it is not something random and communally driven conflict, but it is politically driven conflict.
Feseha Tekle, an Ethiopian researcher for rights group Amnesty International, says civilians are caught up in the latest fighting in the north and security forces are carrying out discriminatory arrests.
The situation remains dire and the conflict seems to be escalating even this week. But what follows is that since the withdrawal of the Ethiopian National Defense Force from parts of Tigray, there has been waves of arrests and detention targeting Tigrayans in Addis and out of Addis actually. So we have spoken to family members, lawyers and friends of people who are affected. So it shows that Tigrayans are being targeted by the Ethiopian security forces.
The Tigray conflict has driven some 50,000 people into neighboring Sudan and caused a hunger crisis affecting millions. The region is largely cut off from the rest of the country and aid agencies are struggling to access the area to provide needed humanitarian and medical assistance. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Today, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said His government will not allow anarchy and mayhem after days of violence in key cities. He made the comments as he visited Etaquini municipality, which includes Durban, one of the communities hit hardest by the looting and violence. Ramaphosa also said security officers have identified the ringleaders in the violence and indicated the suspects had planned and instigated attacks. The violence began a week ago with protests by supporters of former President Jacob Zuma, who surrendered to prison authorities to begin serving a 15-month sentence. The Constitutional Court found Zuma in contempt of court for refusing to testify before a commission investigating allegations of rampant corruption during his years in office. The protests quickly turned into looting, leaving shops and warehouses empty and burned, particularly in Johannesburg, Durban, and Pietermaritzburg. Journalist Darren Taylor in Johannesburg has been covering the violence for VOA and has been on the streets as riots played out. He spoke yesterday with Africa 54 managing editor Vincent McCorry about what he has seen and heard. Here's part of the conversation.
Well, Vince, there have been reports of the riots and looting spreading to other towns and cities, but in very small ways. At this stage, it is still confined to Johannesburg, which seems to be calming down at the moment. And the big problem at the moment is still KwaZulu-Natal, specifically Durban. The city of Pietermaritzburg, which is near Durban, basically the looters have cleaned it out. People are saying, economists are saying, there is just no way that that town is going to recover anytime soon because it's basically gone in terms of infrastructure, and goods and businesses. People have burned down factories, warehouses, etc. There is a greater contingent today of soldiers in Durban, and it seems to be calming down there to a degree. But the problem you are sitting there now at the moment is with vigilantes. The vigilantes are in various standoffs with groups of looters, and they also don't trust the police and the security forces.
Now, this began as a protest against the incarceration of former President Jacob Zuma. But obviously, things morphed into a totally different thing. What are the people saying? What do they say is the motivation for what they're doing right now, or this destruction?
Vince, the Zuma factor faded when the first fire was lit. As you say, it first started out as a few isolated protests about the incarceration of Jacob Zuma. Well, it quickly became something completely different. The people are telling me, when I've been on the ground, that you'll get people saying, yes, we're doing this because of Zuma. It has got absolutely, at this stage, nothing to do with Jacob Zuma. It seems to have been just a groundswell of dissatisfaction, lawlessness, criminality, criminal gangs joining the throngs of people, and basically taking goods that before they never, ever had access to. Also, the fact of poverty also faded pretty fast as well as the main motivation, because in many areas you had people who clearly were not poor pulling up to various places that they knew had been targeted by looters, pulling up in luxury vehicles and loading their vehicles as well. So we are dealing with a culture of criminality over here in South Africa that many analysts are blaming on the ANC, who have allegedly looted the state for the past 20 years. The people have obviously taken their lead from their leaders. They also have a police force over here who they do not respect at all, who are often implicated in crimes themselves. So you're dealing with a population over here who has got no respect for the law, who have got no examples to look up to, like when we had someone who was a moral leader such as Nelson Mandela and others. And there is profound disappointment in President Cyril Ramaphosa, who just seems to be, speaking, saying, we're going to stop it, we're going to stop this, it's under control. But yet, you know, on the TV screen below him, in the little box below him, is just scenes of utter carnage. So people here are just, I don't think they ever thought that even their government could lose control of a situation like this at any stage. And all I can think of is, and all I can tell you is that it is just one of profound disappointment and even shock that this was allowed to escalate.
That was journalist Darren Taylor in Johannesburg. He was speaking with VOA's Vincent McCorry. The leadership of the Nigerian community in South Africa has appealed to the Nigerian and South African governments to help members affected by riots in that country to restart businesses again. The Nigerian Union South Africa says more than 30 Nigerian-owned businesses were looted and burned by mobs during protests sparked by the jailing of former South African President Jacob Zuma. Adeotola Olubajo is the president of Nigerian Union South Africa, the umbrella body of the Nigerian community in that country. He spoke to reporter Mike Imbonye about the effect of massive looting and destruction on some members of the union.
It's very bad and horrible sight to behold, the kind of damage that is done, which I know that the country may not be able to recover from it in the couple of years to come.
What has been the effect of the violence, looting and destruction on some members of the Nigerian community and their businesses?
The current looting and attacks, the overall violence have a huge effect, negative effect on the Nigerians here in South Africa, because those businesses that were first attacked on Julie Street in Johannesburg town, also in JP's town, they were mostly owned by Nigerians. We identify more than 30, I think about 32 now, small businesses that are being looted and destroyed. What we don't understand is the reason behind burning down the businesses after they have been looted. We find it difficult to understand the wisdom or the reason behind such, because now most of the people that are affected have been victim of xenophobic attack in 2018, and some of them have not really recovered from such from the attack. So this one again now, we believe many of them may not be able to recover except there is a miracle or help from someone.
Do you know if any Nigerian is among those arrested or dead?
Up to now, we cannot be able to ascertain whether a Nigerian was arrested or dead, because the nationality of those who are arrested have not been made known to the public. I think the police is still profiling them. And also, the fatalities, those who unfortunately met their death during this attack, their identity have not been revealed.
What does the Nigerian Union South Africa want the South African and Nigerian governments to do for Nigerians affected by the riots?
We want the South African government to please come to the aid of these small business owners who have suffered this loss, not just now, but in the years past, so that they will not just fold up like that, because many of them are employing South Africans. I think those businesses that are affected, the minimum, an average three South Africans work with each of those businesses. So when you look at the economic impact, not just on the owner of the business, also on the community, is a negative one. Therefore, we are calling on the South African government and the federal government of Nigeria to please help in making sure that these people get some startup capital in order to be able to come up with their businesses again.
That was Aditola Olubajo, the head of the Nigerian Union in South Africa. He was speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt. After successfully containing the coronavirus last year, Tunisia is now grappling with a rise in infections. Hospitals in Tunisia have seen a significant influx of patients over the past 2 weeks. The health ministry said Tunisia's health system has collapsed under the weight of the COVID-19 pandemic, describing the virus's effect in the country as catastrophic. Radwan Masmoudi, a leading member of the political bureau of the Ennahda party in Tunisia, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the impact of the spike on the already troubled Tunisian economy.
I think the economic situation is indeed catastrophic in Tunisia right now, and the social situation as well is also very bad. People are really suffering from very low income, especially people at the lower income people. Roughly 1 to 2 million people have been out of a job in the past year, and they are finding it increasingly hard to feed themselves or to feed their families. The government is also under economic duress and has not been able to provide any kind of financial assistance to those in need. The gross domestic product was decreased or has decreased in 2020 by 9%. And the forecast is that Tunisia will have a further decrease in the gross domestic product by 11 to 12% in 2021. This means that the economy has shrunk by almost 20% in 2 years. So I do agree that the situation is very bad and getting worse every day, and that this pandemic has had a very heavy toll on Tunisia's economy.
Since June 20th, Tunisian authorities have imposed a total lockdown on 6 regions across Tunisia, and the capital, Tunis, has been placed under partial lockdown since last week, with weekend lockdowns from July 10th to prevent crowding at the beaches. Why then this spike in COVID-19 cases in Tunisia?
I think the crisis has been looming for several months. Actually, Tunisia did very well early on last year and imposed very strict travel restrictions and confinements in March until May of 2020, and reached 0 new cases for 2 months in June and July of last year. But then I think Tunisia and Tunisians became overconfident and underestimated the dangers of this virus, and they committed 2 big mistakes. The first one is opening the borders in August of 2020 to tourists and to Tunisians who live abroad without even requiring a PCR test. And the second biggest mistake is not ordering enough vaccines early on to vaccinate all Tunisians, but relying on the World Health Organization to provide free vaccines. And of course, that was not enough. Now, the government is playing catch up and trying to vaccinate everyone, but it's almost too late, because last week, 916 people died of COVID in just 7 days. And that is the highest per capita death rate due to COVID in the whole world. So Tunisia right now has reached very alarming rate of infection and rate of death, and one of the highest in the world.
Across Tunisia, only 4% of the population have received the full 2 doses of vaccine. The president's office said last week that the United States pledged to donate 500,000 vaccine doses to Tunisia. Several other countries promised to help Tunisia to fight the coronavirus. What is needed to contain this spike besides vaccination?
Tunisia needs a lot of help from the international community and from the United States. Tunisia needs about 20 million doses of vaccine to vaccinate all Tunisians, a population of 10 or 11 million people. And we also need help in administering these vaccines throughout the country, especially in rural areas, as quickly as possible, because a fourth or fifth wave is expected in September, which could be even worse and more dangerous than the one we are seeing now. So Tunisia needs increased economic support to address the economic and social needs of the people and to create some economic and social stability in the country, which hopefully would allow Tunisia to overcome this terrible pandemic and maintain its course towards building a real democracy and the first successful democracy in the Arab world.
That was Radwan Masmoudi with the political bureau of the Ennahda party in Tunisia. He spoke with my colleague Mohamed Al-Shenawi a short time ago. The UN Refugee Agency reports a series of brutal attacks by armed groups in North Kivu province in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo has forced nearly 20,000 civilians to flee for their lives. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
More than 100 armed groups, such as the Ugandan Allied Democratic Forces, have been terrorizing communities in the eastern DRC for decades. On May 6th, Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi launched a state of emergency in North Kivu and Ituri provinces. Following that declaration, people's hopes were raised that violence would end and law and order would be established in the region. However, UN Refugee Agency spokesman Baba Baluch says armed groups are continuing to devastate civilian lives. He says there's little military presence in the area to protect people from the relentless attacks.
Where civilians are on their own, then the armed group get a chance to make a comeback and attack civilian lives. And that's why they have been going from towns to town, villages to villages, killing people, burning their houses, looting the houses, injuring people as well.
The UNHCR says the Allied Democratic Forces have allegedly killed at least 14 people and injured many others around the city of Beni since June 22nd. Last year, the ADF reportedly killed 500 civilians in eastern DRC. Over the past 2 years, nearly 2 million people in North Kivu province alone have been uprooted by insecurity and violence, according to the UN. In the aftermath of the current crisis, Baluch says the UNHCR and partners are helping local authorities register forcibly displaced families and respond to their needs.
More than 100,000 people were assisted with emergency shelters in 2020 and almost 14,000 so far in 2021. But needs remain high as attacks by armed groups continue to displace people in the province, with many forced to flee multiple times.
Baluch says women and children are particularly vulnerable and are being provided with shelter, relief items, and cash. He says his agency's resources are overstretched as the international community has not responded well to its appeal. He says UNHCR's $205 million appeal to run its DRC operations this year is only 36% funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Paris Club of Lender Nations offered its support of Sudan's democratic transition by canceling much of the debt. Paris Club President Emmanuel Moline said during a telephone news conference today that out of a total $23.5 billion Sudan owed, $14.1 billion had been cancelled. The rest has been rescheduled and will likely be cancelled as well. The Paris Club has representatives from around 20 leading creditor countries and seeks to help nations facing financial problems. Today's announcement came as part of a wider effort by the International Monetary Fund, IMF, to relieve more than $50 billion of Sudan's debt by 90% in the next few years. Sudan piled up heavy foreign debt under former President Omar al-Bashir, who was ousted in April 2019 following mass protests against his rule. The country is now run by a transitional government comprised of civilians and military officers. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.